where the wild things are. The night Max wore his wolf suit and made mischief of one kind and another, his mother called him Wild Thing, and Max said, I'll eat you up. So he was sent to bed without eating anything. That very night in Max's room, a forest grew. That's the opening to Maurice Sendak's much-loved children's picture book, Where the Wild Things Are. Compared to picture books today, Where the Wild Things Are is a pretty scary book. Sendak told Steve Paulson that as a Jewish child in New York during World War II, he was completely aware of the fate of the Jewish children in Europe, and Sendak says this contributed to his view of childhood as a frightening and scary time.
It was a constant in our house, which was constant grieving, and also me having a sense of guilt, actually, that I arbitrarily, dumb luck, was born on this side of the ocean. Children who probably looked a little like me were born on that side, and they died, and they didn't have a life. It was a guilt trip. Like, we had to be aware of them all the time, and if we forgot them, our parents reminded us that we had the privilege to play stoop ball and go to the movies when those kids couldn't do anything. It was a heavy burden to put on a child.
Was death also a big fear of yours? I mean, not necessarily that you were going to die in these camps, but just that something horrible could happen to you?
Oh, yes. But it had nothing to do with the camps. It had to do with the fact that you were a 30s child and there was no penicillin, there was no sulfa drugs, and you ritually, every child, had to get scarlet fever and the mumps and whooping cough and every kind of measles imaginable. And so I knew that mortality was a very real neighbor. And we were not spared. We heard about it. We talked about it. We knew the death of children here and there. I'm not sorry about that. And it didn't traumatize me. It hurt me. It hurt my childhood. It hurt my happiness. But it's something which I had to know and perhaps knew it too soon and too overwhelmingly, but so it was.
Do you feel like you are drawing on those early childhood experiences, those kinds of fears, as you have continued to do your picture books?
Yes. It's certainly threaded through everything I've done. All the serious books I've done are so threaded with, I would put it in terms of the danger to children, the unspoken danger of just being a child, of just being weaker, of just being vulnerable. And that sense of vulnerability, which is inbred because we have to take care of ourselves, like the little fawn who's born, and he better get up on his feet real fast. And his mother looks anxiously at him while he's stumbling about and flopping over. If he doesn't start running soon, he's finished. And I think that was a sense that we had all the time, and that was mainly provoked by World War II and the Nazis and the Holocaust. So that was dramatically my theme in all my work. I don't know that I was trying to solve anything so much as I was haunted, thoroughly haunted by the subject. The idea of children in a position of danger, even one as simple as Max's and Wild Things, when he expects his mother to understand everything, including his atrocious behavior. And this is one day she doesn't. She's had it. And there the crisis that I conceived of as crisis is his sudden awareness that her tolerance is not always there and that she could get just as angry back at him. How do you survive that? How do you survive that the first time it happens? Well, he has a huge fantasy, and then he is consoled considerably at the end when there is his supper waiting for him. And so, of course, he learns that she loves him, and he also learns that she can have a rotten day. It's not going to change their relationship, and it'll go on that way until he's 30 and enters therapy. He won't get away with it. And in all my books, there is a critical moment in a child's life that he has to figure out what to do without the aid of logic or experience. And so some of the reactions and some of the solutions are bizarre because they don't know where to go.
So that Max would, in Where the Wild Things Are, that he would basically fly into this rage and then go romping off with monsters. I mean, that's his way of dealing with this situation.
Exactly. He exhausts himself in a temper tantrum and then comes home. And the first time that happens is a shock. But now he's prepared for the second time and the third time. And that's how we grow up, and that's how we experience it. And to me, that fraction of a second in a child's life, which goes by so fast, parents often miss it. How does a kid solve that moment?
Now, in the picture book that you and Tony Kushner did, Brundabar is a very nasty organ grinder. And at one point, mm-hmm. he sings, "Little children, how I hate him, how I wish the bedbugs ate him when they're rude and answer back, stuff him in a burlap sack." And it's really a fable about kids conquering this evil figure. And it seems like good has triumphed. And then on the very last page, Brundabar reappears and he says, "We shall meet again, my dears. I'll be back." It's a very chilling conclusion to your book.
Yes, but a thoroughly necessary and honest one. Evil will come back.
Do children get this book? Do they understand this is a story about confronting evil?
I have really no idea, but I have total trust in children, complete and total trust in children, and their incredible awareness of life, which is much keener and sharper. They are the little fawns who have to get up and run, and they have to know how to do that. And we must help them by telling them the truth. How different is that little ending when you think of all the children who sat through the towers falling and saw it over and over and over and over again? And then to hear that more evil is coming, and then there's the orange thing and the red thing, and something else is going to happen, and it could be here and it could be there. How do children live with that? With a sense of impending peril, that suddenly the guardrails are gone. I mean, how do you live? How do you go on? I'll tell you an example of a story I've told quite often, which I have some friends in. They had a little girl in school. The school was very close to the towers, and they're petrified when they heard the streets were covered with, as we all know, smoke, waste, broken things. And the school had been let out, and they got their way to the school, and there she was with the other children standing outside the school. And they scooped her up, and they ran home, and she was telling the story of how exciting it all was, and the smoke, and then the fire engines came, and then the policemen and the firemen, and she said, "And Daddy, I saw little birdies flying all around the building on fire, all the little birdies." And he was horrified, but he didn't say anything. And anyway, they got home, and they had a lovely evening. Everything was lovely, and nighttime came, and he put her to bed, and he was feeling so pent up, but she looked so content. And when he was leaving the room, she called him back, and she whispered in his ear, "Daddy, I know they were not birdies." So in a sense, which happens over and over and over again, children protect their parents from what they know. And they know how hard it is for their parents to suffer this and accept it. So they soften it for their parents. I've seen this dozens of times in my life. They're braver than their parents.
Maurice Sendak, the author and illustrator of countless picture books for children. He's most famous for his classic, "Where the Wild Things Are." Steve Paulson spoke with him.